What do you do when the trail turns violent without warning? When a routine training run becomes a fight for survival? When your dog team is injured, your family is watching a tracker frozen at zero, and finishing the race could cost you your life? Today's episode isn't just about mushing. It's about resilience, leadership, and knowing when to hold on and when to let go. This is the story behind Without Warning. I'm Robert Forto, and this is the Mushing Podcast.
Nobody covers dog sledding like Mushing from First Paw Media. Our team of athletes, volunteers, race organizers, and mushers like Robert and Michelle Forto brings you closer to the sport. If it's happening, we are there. Live from the qualifying races in January and February, the Iditarod in March, and in the summer, Mushing takes you on the road with our team and trail tour. We connect you with a history of the sport, in-depth interviews with the top mushers, and great storytelling and breaking news all year long. Follow on mushing.com.
Bridget Watkins, thank you for joining us today. How are things up in your neck of the woods?
Well, they're a little more quiet than they used to be when I had 30-something dogs out behind my house, but they're going pretty well.
I am excited to have you back on the podcast. I know you've been on a couple of times. A year or so ago, we talked about your book. Today, we're talking about a brand new movie/documentary that just came out. But before we jump into all of that, can you briefly tell us who you are and what you're all about, please?
Yeah, I am Bridget Watkins. I grew up here in Alaska and fell in love with the sport of dog mushing at a young age of six and kind of had the dream of running Iditarod. And a lot of life took me in different directions and different paths, but found my way back to long distance mushing and took me years and years, but I finally reached that goal. And now I'm just going all over and kind of telling about that story and the obstacles I had to overcome to get there.
And that truly is the focus of our podcast today. In our first talk, we talked about your book, Marker to Marker, and I think it was released a year or two ago. Before we jump into the movie, how does that book relate, if at all, to what we're going to talk about today?
Well, you know, the book was written by me and it was a memoir that I really feel I felt pressed to share so that people could really hear my story, because we all have stories and we like to hear what other people have gone through to kind of encourage us through the next season or whatever our phase is. And so it took me quite a few years to write it, but I just put all these stories that I had had throughout the years into a book. And that's really how it came about. And yeah, we released that in 2024 in November. And now we're, you know, a year past that, and I couldn't be more happy. We actually are releasing the audiobook here in the next week or so.
Excellent. And the movie just came out in December. Congratulations for that. A lot of projects, a lot of irons in the fire there. Bridget, you said that you grew up in a mushing family. You started getting involved with this, like you said, at 6 years old. So just a little girl, you were out in the dog yard and jumping on the sled and all of that. Can you give us a little bit of a history with that? What was your story growing up? Did you run in junior Iditarod or anything like that? What led up to your adult career as a musher?
Well, it boiled down to family time on the weekends and my parents wanting us to get outside and do something fun in the cold, dark Alaskan winter. And my dad found this local ad for where there were sprint mushers that were gathering and having these little races locally. And we attended and thought, that'd be fun. We could get a couple dogs and do that. And, you know, that's how the story always goes. You get one or two dogs and before you know it, you have a whole team. And so I found myself racing on the weekends with other junior mushers, anywhere from two dogs to six dogs. And we were on sprint tracks. So I was a sprint musher then, where we were going short distances and running super fast, 20 miles an hour, you know, just hanging on for dear life. And so I think that's really where the thrill of the trail came, because it was all about holding on and how fast you could get to the finish line. And I did that all the way throughout my childhood until, you know, as I got older and my parents got into mid-distance mushing and long-distance mushing, I just kind of followed suit and thought, huh, it's kind of, this is great. I had been to the finish line of Yukon Quest as a child and saw what it really looked like for a 1,000-mile musher to finish across the finish line with that team after they had just been in the wilderness for, you know, 2 weeks. And I thought, wow, that would be incredible. And so that really sparked that interest of what that would be like to mush across the state. And I just progressed throughout the years from sprint, and we moved on to mid-distance dogs. And before I knew it, I was qualified for Iditarod.
So were you the typical musher kid who had been involved with this their entire childhood? And then you said, you know what, I've got to take a break for a little while. I've got to go to college. I got to go to school, get a job, whatever. Did you have that little bit of a, I guess, mid-life crisis in your 20s or so, or did you just keep plugging away as you went?
No, I definitely took a break. That wasn't by my doing. My parents got divorced. You know, life happens. And I was actually moved to Arkansas. And so I moved to Arkansas and finished up my high school and college career there. And upon moving back, I immediately realized how much I missed mushing. And it didn't take a day to get back out there on the trail with the dogs.
So, and then you were off to the races, so to speak. So let's jump right over to your movie. It's called Without Warning. It's out on Amazon. You can watch it right now. And I just watched it just to be fresh for this interview, literally 15 minutes before we hit record. It is very well done. For people in the mushing community, they probably know the stories by now, but we of course have a lot of casual fans that listen to the podcast, and they may not know all that entailed. Can you give us the elevator pitch, if you can, about this movie, and then we'll jump into some questions?
Yeah, it's going to take you on a roller coaster of emotions because, you know, we're all fighting our own battles. And I think this kind of just pulls out our own emotions, everything from challenges personally to things that you have to overcome within your family, within your children that you have. And, you know, it really touches on different people's aspects in their own lives and they can kind of relate. And I think that really tugs on the heartstrings a little bit more. And it really brings about some of the biggest scenes within my story and just puts them right in front of your face.
And it truly has sort of that three-story arc to it. The first part of it is about a moose attack. The second part is your first attempt at Iditarod. And then the kind of the closing scene of that is the second time you ran Iditarod. Do we want to have any spoilers here, or can we just jump into this?
You can give them some teasers. I'm happy with that. You know, people are going to still want to see it for themselves, I'm sure. So you definitely can't just tell how the story is. It's something to be seen.
For sure. So let's talk about the first stanza of the movie, and that is a moose attack with a dog team. It is by far every dog musher's worst fear. And you talk about that in detail, riveting emotional detail as you tell that story in the movie. I can only imagine what you were going through there, just the ups and downs. I've had close encounters, but nothing like you had. And I remember, I guess it was probably seeing pictures of that maybe when this first happened, but man, that had to have been a very scary situation.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of those life and death things that you don't really know how you're going to get out, and you don't know what the next step or the next moment is gonna hold. And, you know, we had some footage of that actual event that we had never shared with anyone until we were approached by our producer that produced the film. And he portrayed it beautifully. And I think he put everything together very tactfully. And there's nothing in there that, you know, can't be shown, of course. And that was our intent. And it definitely is going to open your eyes to the brutality of what wildlife can do to a human or to a dog team.
And one of the core parts of that story is just how quick people come into action here in Alaska, even though we're remote and cell service can be spotty and all of those things. You made out a call and the cavalry came a running, didn't they?
They really did, like beyond our wildest imagination. You know, we were out there for an hour during the attack, but by the time people started showing up, you know, there were droves of people, and it didn't just stop there on the trail. That extended for the next you know, honestly, 2 or 3 months throughout my life where people just came around and helped us wherever it was, whether it was with dogs or our home or our children or getting us on the trail or down to Anchorage and finally onto the Iditarod. It took an army to get us there. People we didn't even know, but knew our story and wanted to help. And it really just shows that there's so many people willing to help out someone when they're in need. And, you know, that's, I'll be forever grateful for those people.
And one of the through lines through the entire documentary was just how important it was for you to stay with your team. And you said that over and over throughout the documentary. I cannot be without my dog team, whether it be at this first stanza with the moose attack and then, of course, the harrowing experience there on your first Iditarod and on and on. Can you describe that a little bit? I'm sure it's easy to sort of grasp, but it's tough to really put a pin in the basket, if you will, for folks that have never been on a dog team before. How important is that bond? How important is it for you to be a member of the team as you describe in the documentary?
Well, honestly, you know, it's your breath of life out there because you have to be one unit. And whenever one member of that unit is injured or taken out, you know, you feel it. And so you raise these dogs from the time they're born and their parents from the time they're born. And so you've been part of their entire life. They have learned to trust you from the moment they open their eyes until they're taking you across some of the most treacherous terrain that you ask them to go across. You know, they trust you and I trust them with my life, honestly. And it's an unspoken bond. And I think that other mushers, that's why we do it. That's why we're out there, is because of that incredible bond that you have with these dogs and the wilderness, and you know, that you guys can overcome anything together. And so you feel as though you're their coach. You're the one that's there to guide them along. And, you know, when they're weak, you're strong and vice versa. And so you would never leave your team because you're one. And so you can't divide one, then you have nothing. Right. So it felt like I was abandoning them to be asked to leave them despite where I was in the circumstances. And so that's something you never do. And really, you are part of that team and you're leading that team, but they're also leading you. And so you don't want to break that.
And I'm thinking of every other activity I've ever been involved in, whether it be recreational or whatever. And there's not really anything like that. I would imagine it's something similar to, you know, having a crew like in a military platoon or something like that. But it is intense, isn't it? That bond that we have with our dogs.
You know, it is. It's unspoken and it's unwritten and no words ever have to be spoken. You know, people let you down all the time, but your dogs and that relationship is usually never broken. The trust is always there. And, you know, we can walk out and it's just our body language. We don't even have to say a word. And dogs will do without even being spoken to, because it's just such a close bond you have with this team. And, you know, the hours and hours and days and weeks and months that you've spent with them, you can recognize their body language from a twitch of an ear to, you know, every little move they're making, and they can do the same for you. They read you like a book as well. So you spend an incredible amount of time with them.
So after the moose attack, and I'm going to ask you for a clarification here, because I do not recall from the movie, somebody had said, "Hey, Bridget, you are going to run Iditarod, right? What's the deal?" Was that your husband or was that your handler? Who was that said that?
Well, I mean, everybody, but okay. ultimately my husband is the one, you know. It had been a few days after the attack and we had been going through a whole lot to keep dogs healthy and alive. And he said, "You know, you've got to make a decision. I'm not pushing you either way, but you know, are you going to run or not? Like what's your plan?" And at that moment, my plan was, are you freaking kidding me? Like, no, I'm not running. I don't even have dogs. But I think it takes those strong people around you to realize the strength that you have that you don't even know you have within yourself to bring that out. And, you know, I credit that to my husband because he never pushed me one way or the other. He just brought it to the forefront of my mind of like, look, you have a possibility. Like, are you going to do it or not? And it wasn't until I walked out to my dog team for the first time and went into my dog yard, you know, and they were happy and wagging their tails and they were like, "Hey, where you been?" That I was reminded, you know, we could do this. Like maybe there is a possibility.
Yeah. And that truly is going into the next section of this movie. And I'm going to focus on on your husband for a second, because he plays a pivotal role, not only, of course, in your story, but in the documentary itself. And one crucial scene, and I think it's during the second Iditarod attempt, where he says, we're just sitting there watching the tracker, and it's just, you know, it's just heartbreaking. It's terrifying. It makes me sick, or something that he said to that effect. And what I'm trying to convey here is the folks that are not even necessarily a part of the team on the trail, they're having those same ups and downs as we do out there at a race or a training run or whatever. They're feeling it as well, aren't they?
Oh, I would say almost more, because I at least know what's in front of me and I can see. My husband's sitting there looking at, you know, a tracker that's not moving and says miles per hour zero for however many hours. He has no idea what I'm facing, you know, and the unknown is worse. And your support crew that's at home sleeps probably less than you do on the trail, because they're watching your tracker and then they're trying to live life at the same time. And the two don't really go together. So they're exhausted, and it's an emotional roller coaster for them as well. And I, you know, being out there as a musher, you know, they're watching you and you know that they can see your tracker at zero. And it's hard because you know that they're hurting for you as well.
Yeah. And before we jump into that story, you said something key, and I know we've done a podcast or two about this over the years, where we talk about the trackers and social media are sort of the blessing and a curse of mushing in today's world. And you say that. You say, oh my goodness, this is sort of my worst enemy, if you will, this tracker, but it's also my lifesaver. And that's sort of the key through line to the next part of this story, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. I, you know, was fortunate to be raised in an era where we didn't have trackers and we just waited to hear when a musher would get into a checkpoint, or we would stand outside for hours waiting to see a headlight. You know, those days are, I hate to say, far gone now, but the trackers are great, but they also are a curse.
They are. And when you're out there on your first Iditarod, you're cruising along, things are going pretty good. You've overcome your obstacles, I'm sure a little bit of PTSD from your moose attack as you're working your way through the trees. You get over the Alaska Range there, and of course in wide open country, so it's a little bit easier at that point to distinguish what's coming and what's going. But then Mother Nature literally slaps you guys in the face, and you guys were in the middle of a storm we haven't seen in a while. I remember following the Iditarod then on our nightly coverage here on the podcast and just remembering what you guys were going through. My goodness, what an experience.
Yeah, it was quite the ride. You know, I had lived out in Western Alaska. I'd lived in Nome for 6 years, so I had ridden out these storms. I'd been in them before, and I knew what ground storms could bring, and it just came up so fast, and you don't know how long they're going to last. You know, being an ER nurse, I had seen people's lives taken from these exact storms. And so I knew the significance of them. I knew that, you know, you had to be on your A game or Mother Nature would win.
So we're not going to give the entire story away there at this point, but as we mentioned, with the tracker there, sort of a lifesaver, you ended up having to quote unquote push the button here, as musher speak goes. And the race was over. You had to be transported to Nome and all these other things. What was going through your mind at that point? Because I know I've been in scenarios like that, nothing as intense as that, but just having those few minutes of thinking, oh my goodness, you know, this is at the end, this is where we're at, those sorts of things. What was going through your mind, Bridget, at that point where you knew at least the work up to this point was over?
You know, in the moment leading up to it, I knew there was only one thing I could do, because ultimately my dog's lives and my own and my fellow mushers kind of stood in the balance of me pushing my pride aside and finishing this race and, quote, toughing it out. You know, there has to be a part of you that can realize, like, life or death has to happen here. And, you know, I had to swallow my pride and say, yeah, finish line's 50 miles away, but I might not make it alive. So in those moments after, it's just the most sheer and utter disbelief and, you know, hopelessness that a person could feel, like you have let everyone down, and your family, yourself, your dog team, everything everyone had worked for, not just me, because it's not just me. Like an Iditarod team is never just a person. It is a crew of people. And so these people are pulling for you more than you're pulling for yourself. And so you just feel utterly disheartened at the situation of, you know, I just can't believe I just did that.
Right. And the next scene, the third stanza of this movie is you competing in the race again. Was that the next year or was there some time there?
No, it was the next year.
So it was the next year. So what was going through your mind leading up to that in this sort of in-between, between the race previous and then hitting the starting line there in Anchorage and Willow? What was going through your mind at this point? Did you ever say, I'm going to give this one last shot? This is something I have to finish. You know, it's kind of unresolved. What was going through your mind in that year?
Honestly, I didn't want to do it. There was nothing in me that wanted to do it. I wanted to be done.
Okay.
But it was that lingering, I have to show my children that you're going to have to really work hard for what you want and that you can't give up despite fears and failures and setbacks. Like if this is your goal, and I didn't have a good reason. Like my only reason was I knew it was going to be hard and I knew it was going to be take everything and then some. And, you know, the second year was almost, it wasn't almost, it was definitely harder because I knew what was coming. You know, your rookie year, ignorance is bliss, but your second year, you know what's coming. So it was a mental game from the moment I didn't finish the first time all the way up until I actually took off at the starting line. I was still wanting to, you know, wanting to say, I'm not going to do it, you know? I had something to prove within myself because I didn't want to look back, you know, later in life and say, I wish I would have, because I knew I had to. So I had to try.
And that goes right back to the book. And of course, the title of the book, Marker to Marker. And you were literally working your way down the trail as everybody does on Iditarod. And for folks that are following along onto that dang tracker, point by point, right? You're just going from one spot to the other. And was it at this point where you said, hey, I'm going to stop in every checkpoint because I know I can, I want to. Was that then?
No, that was the first Iditarod. Okay. My first Iditarod, you know, I would say was a magic carpet ride until the last day.
Gotcha.
But my second Iditarod was nothing short of a storm from the moment I left the starting line. I met challenges that I had never met the year before. And so I knew I was going to have to work hard for it. And I did.
And those storms come up not only in racing, but of course in life, but there's always these characters that keep coming up in our life. We've talked about your husband. We've talked about your neighbor that came to the rescue there at the moose attack. And another pivotal character in this narrative is another musher that you followed along on the trail on both races. Can you tell us a little bit about the relationship you have with this guy?
Well, yeah, you get close to the people that you travel this trail with because you're with them for so many days. And, you know, you're rooting for your next musher that's on the same, you know, run sleep schedule as you. And you talk from everything about, oh, you get to know their dogs and their lead dogs. And you get to know that this dog isn't eating well, or this dog has a sore wrist. You know, you kind of take on their burdens a little bit as you're sharing them with each other. And so you bond just through the trials of the trail alone. But Gerhard, the musher that you're speaking of, and myself had never really met before until we found ourselves on our first Iditarod and, you know, in the thick of the storm when we were fighting for survival ultimately together. And then the second Iditarod, somehow fate would have it, you know, we ended up together at the same checkpoint, almost the exact same time of day, leaving at the same time, you know. And so it was deja vu all over again. Him and I had something to prove to ourselves and to each other that we were going to do it. And, you know, he never left me and I never left him. And even when we had to sacrifice things for each other, we did it. And, you know, that's what mushers do out there that is so unspoken that everybody watching the trackers doesn't see, you know. You don't see that the musher will come back and help your team across a creek, or that they're going to help give you some snacks when your dog is picky for this one. You know, you're really out there helping each other out. And it's not just one musher. It's pretty much everyone is out there trying to help somebody else get down the trail.
And that's what I wanted this story to be all about, sort of that community or that village, as you say, that brings everybody together. There was a picture in the film of you and Gerhardt. I assume that is in Nome, right there at the Muni, yeah, or at the finish. Aside from your finish, did you guys get a chance to take it all in? Did you have a beer, a coffee, a meal at the Chinese restaurant right down the street? What happened after it was all over between the two of you guys?
You know, we kind of laughed it off because the whole time we were going the last race, and when we found ourselves back together, we just jokingly were like, this is it. We're not doing it again, you know? And so once we finished, we both were just overcome with relief more than anything that we did it and that we came back and did it again. You know, he was fighting his own demons and things that he had to come to get back on the trail, just like I was. And, you know, being there together to fight him together through that last 77 miles was incredible. And, you know, he was at the finish line and waited for me. And every time he couldn't see my dog team as we were traveling, even from safety on in, he would stop and wait until I got back in sight. And he never left me because he knew if my dog team stopped, he would have come back for me. I have no doubt.
That is awesome. And that's what it's all about, is those friendships that form with people that you may have never expected to bond with. And I think that is a key point to this. So here we are. We are an Iditarod finisher at this point. Life is back to normal. You get back into the thick of things at home. You write this book. You finish this movie. Before we jump into the questions I ask all of my guests, what is next? My goodness, you've had a lot on your plate in the last few years.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I've taken a step back. My kids are only young once, and, you know, they are my number one priority in life. And so people continue to ask me, like, oh, how could you get out of dogs? You know, I quote, sold my team. Really, my team went to my good friend and handler that was through the thick of it with me, Jen Nelson. And she's got my main racing team. And then all the other dogs kind of have gone to other places in groups. And they're still all mostly mushing. I have a few left here with me. But for the most part, they're still going down the trail. But my trail now is following my kids around. I don't have them that many more years, and I want to be present and be the mom that they need.
And that's the important part of it, right? Like you said, we are only young, or we only live once. So go out and conquer those challenges one at a time, right?
Yeah. And be willing to pivot when things change, and it's okay that, you know, different seasons of life bring different things.
Excellent. Before I jump into these other questions, Bridget, is there anything else you want to mention? We're going to put links and things to all the things we talked about, but is there anything else you want to say before we sort of wrap this up?
No, I just think people should really follow your dreams and know where your priorities are, and don't give up. It's going to get hard, but you got to just keep pushing.
All right. I did not forewarn you about these, but if you've listened to the podcast at all, you probably know what's coming. They're pretty basic, but they're usually pretty fun when we start asking these. There are four questions here, Bridget, and I'm excited to hear what you are having to say. The first one is, what is your favorite song or artist? What are you listening to right now?
I listen to a lot of a lot of Christian music. Brandon Lake is who I listen to.
And do you have a favorite song at all?
Well, there's a lot.
Okay.
Pretty much anything on any of his albums I listen to.
All right. I'm going to link to Brandon Lake there for sure. All right. You've been mushing for a long time. I'm sure you know a thing or two about gear. What is one thing, and it does not have to be mushing gear, what is one thing that you always have with you other than your phone?
My gun now.
Yeah, and that's a pivotal tool in this story for sure. What is the firearm of choice? What are you carrying in your sled?
Well, that's a hot topic right there.
I know.
But I have a bit. I used to racing. That's two different stories. When I'm training, I have a big shotgun that I actually carry, and then I also have a 10mm on my chest.
Okay, so you're two guns, and I know that you talked about that in the movie itself. Next one is a little bit lighter. What is your favorite snack? And I'm going to put this on two sides here, Bridget. What's your favorite trail snack out on the trail with your dogs? And if you're doing a road trip and you stop at a truck stop and you're going in, you know, you're tired from the road. What are you picking up?
Well, my favorite trail snack actually comes from my dad and Allie, and we just call them like these trail bars that we make that are super healthy, but they don't freeze, so you can eat them. And they basically have oats and bananas and white chocolate chips and peanut butter in them. And so we eat those and we the whole race, and you can eat them when it's frozen or when it's warm, and they're just as good.
Okay. And what about at a truck stop? If you're on the road, on vacation, what are you pulling into the Holiday or the Circle K or whatever it's called and picking up?
You know, I'm pretty boring. I'm usually eating something pretty healthy, like, I don't know, a banana or something. But if I'm tired, I'm probably going to get some kind of energy drink like a Celsius.
Okay. Last question here is, where are you most active on socials? I know you have a couple of websites, but if people want to reach out to you here, where's the best place?
Facebook and Instagram. I also have a website now that is just bridgetwatkins.com. And those are the best places to reach out.
Okay. Bridget Watkins is our guest today. Thank you very much for joining us again. And guys, definitely go check out the movie. It is on Amazon. Just click on over without warning, pop that watch now button, pay the fee, and you're off to the races. Is it available anywhere else, or is it only on Amazon right now for folks that may or may not have that service?
Yeah, there's definitely different places that you can get it. You can also get it on Fandango. There's a couple of different streaming links you can look at on my social media that you can get it on. And it's actually, you can purchase DVDs. There's been quite a few people that have purchased DVDs both at Walmart and on Amazon.
Oh, wow. We'll definitely find some links for that so people can do that as well. Bridget, hang on for just a second as we close here. On behalf of my guest today, this is Robert for Mushing. We will see you guys next time. Goodbye.
Are you a fan of the great outdoors? Do you enjoy the thrill of speed and adventure? Then listen up. Introducing Mushing, your ultimate guide to the exciting world of dog-powered sports and mushing. Whether you're a seasoned musher or just starting out, Mushing has got you covered. Get ready to immerse yourself in captivating stories of incredible sled dog races, expert training tips from seasoned professionals, and gear reviews to help you make the right choices for your team. From the breathtaking landscapes of Alaska to the snowy trails of Scandinavia, Mushing takes you on a thrilling journey through the world of dog-powered sports. Don't miss out on the latest issue, packed with exclusive interviews with top mushers, in-depth articles on sled dog nutrition, and stunning photography that will transport you to the heart of the action. So whether you're dreaming of competing in the Iditarod or simply want to learn more about this incredible sport, Mushing is your go-to resource. Subscribe now and get ready to unleash your passion for mushing. Visit our website at mushing.com or find us on your favorite podcast platform. Mushing, where the spirit of adventure meets the power of the pack.